He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
And I am Robin Leach solo, as my partner Jay is off doing other things on this particular show, for this particular show. And I'd like to start out by saying, discussing pickup trucks from a number of areas. First, the electric pickup is coming to a Ford dealer near us. I'm sure it's coming to a Chevrolet dealer near us. And eventually it'll be coming through a Dodge Chrysler dealer near us. But Ford is starting to ramp up the publicity on their F-150 electric pickup truck and is saying that the F-150 EV will outwork the competition. So as we have had horsepower wars in the pickup truck sector for many years in terms of pulling capacity, torque output, and the like, we're now going to have truck wars in battery output and therefore towing capacity, range capacity, who knows what will range, will add to that in the electric versions of these pickup trucks. It's going to be a lot of lather, I should say, or hoopla, whatever you want to call it. And we will see it on the ads as pickup truck, as electric pickup trucks come on stream, probably not until next year in any big way. But the other thing about pickup trucks, which I've noticed in the past several months, and maybe even as long as a year, is that the faces of pickup trucks are evolving in that it seems that at least in the Ford and Chevy, and even in the FCA, the Dodge pickup trucks, you now are seeing different faces, that is, front ends, available within the same model year on different versions of the same lines of pickup trucks. Chevrolet and GMC's pickup trucks have now got a robust front end in the form of a raised hood, which seems to imply that maybe there was air intakes. They're fake, of course, on top of the hoods, but give the front ends of those pickup trucks a much more masculine, in my point, my viewpoint, and beefy look than the earlier versions of a year or two ago. Ford is also seems to be offering a number of different grill versions of their F-150s and maybe even the F-250s. As you drive by a big Ford dealership, which has a big lot of pickup trucks out front facing the road. And this took me back in my memory banks to last century when Ford's F-150s were out one year and had a very non-masculine front-end look to it. And I parlayed the idea of, wouldn't it be smart if pickup trucks were offered a variety of front ends, differentiation, so that the buyer of a pickup truck could customize his front end look, or her front end look, as the case might be, for her personal taste or his personal taste. Here we are in 2020-21. It seems to have be making inroads as to something I thought about 25 to 30 years ago. That is being taken a step further in the new Bronco, which happens to be about to be showing up, I hope, in the next couple of months or so at Ford dealerships, which is slated as a 2021, I believe. And it's going to have, I think, 8 different faces available, maybe a few, couple less, maybe a few more, ultimately, coming off the assembly line, which will give you yet another way to customize the look of the vehicle that Ford is bringing out. We all know that Jeep has a front end look, sort of based on 7 vertical grills on the front end of all its models. That has been a highly functional way or visible way to identify Jeeps from as far down the road as you can see them coming. We go to the new Jeep Grand Wagoneer, which is now pictorialized in various media, and it is got the 7 vertical grille look. But the first thing I thought of when I saw the first front end picture was that of a Ford Expedition, the latest Ford Expedition, which is like the Chevrolet version of the Suburban. A Ford version of a Chevrolet Suburban. Very wide, broad front. A horizontal bar going across the top of the Jeep. And you don't really see, because it's in chrome, the immediate visibility factor of the 7 vertical grills. At least in a picture that I see in one of my periodicals that I get. But it does look surprising like the Ford Expedition. I've talked on this show over various months and years about being able to see what was coming down the road at you in the form of many types of vehicles, and how very hard it was to tell Nissans from Toyotas, from and Fords from Lincoln Mercurys and all that. And the only way that the manufacturers can do this is to change the face at the front ends and maybe the taillight designs on their vehicles for those of us who are interested in this kind of topic. Most people probably aren't. When you're inside the car, you don't know what your car looks like on the outside, so you don't care whether you're looking unique or not. But I, for one, have always liked cars from their external appearances, and in many cases have bought certain models of cars based on the grille design. And my Hyundai Sonata Hybrid is still got the best grille design of any subsequent Hyundai Sonata Hybrid level of the Sonata.
I was just wondering, do you think that when I say now that, given the fact that, and I wanted to ask about this anyway, there's a whole lot more car advertising and car pointing to people who were hitherto considered to not be a market. And I am curious if you think that this lot's going to care about, start developing more of an interest in sameness or uniformity or being slightly different or.
From what standpoint? From a designer's standpoint, maybe yes.
No, from a purchaser standpoint. The whole assumption in the last...
You know, as I watch people drive by, you know, I sort of try to figure out what types of people are driving what types of cars. And I'm not going to go into it because some of it is not very appealing in my point of view for the segments that I think drive certain kinds of cars. But I think very few people. I think when you go look at a car in a dealer's lot, you do have some idea of physical appearance being part of the attractiveness of it, of the vehicle. But if you're stuck on a certain line of the vehicles that you're looking at, like a sedan, a mid-sized sedan version versus a large sedan, and those large sedans are fast disappearing, as far as I'm concerned, or a small type, you do look for differences in those particular model lines. But some of them become very homogeneous between the model lines. The Hyundai Sonata and the Hyundai Elantra, I may have the wrong one, but I now have got front ends that look absolutely the same in some instances. So that short of being able to tell physically the size of the vehicle from a very far distance, you can't tell a Sonata from an Elantra coming down the road. And for those of you who are really alert to this, I may have the wrong models depicted in this comparison. But Ford had the same problem between the Mercury Grand Marquis and the Crown Victorias in their final years of the Mercury Grand Marquis line. They basically stopped differentiating the Mercury line from the Ford line to such a degree that the interior was identical to the Ford, between the Mercury and the Ford. And as that goes, so went the Mercury line of cars, because it became so much the same thing. It basically was a Ford with a very, very similar a Ford with a very slight, such a light differentiation between the two that inside you couldn't tell the difference in the final model years. So whether or not it comes back, it certainly seems to have come back in the pickup lines, because I see this situation when you drive by a Ford, when our local Ford dealer lot, that there are different grille designs on the same line of cars or trucks. And I think that's very nice, but it's now going to make it very much harder to tell a 2021 Ford truck from a 2020, and going forward, probably during the course of several succeeding model years, because I have also been able to tell cars from the side by the type of wheels they had on them. And I very rarely, I don't think I've been able to find a car line or a truck line between makes of vehicles with the same wheel design in the many years I've been trying to find out if I could see such a similarity. I don't know how they figure out how to keep the wheel designs completely different every year, so there doesn't seem to be much of an overlap, but somehow they do it. There has to be a finite number of wheel designs that designers can come up with before you start repeating the design. But, you know, we're talking about a very, very crazy topic to try to get our listeners interested in, so I'm going to stop on that, unless you have a question, Jill.
I do not.
New Jeep Grand Cherokee, or the Jeep Grand Wagoneer, which is coming next year, I think, to the dealerships, has been a subject of fascination for discussions with respect to whether or not there should ever be a Woody version of the Jeep Wagoneer as it was in the old days. I think it's not going to happen.
Because the people who designed the Jeep Grand Wagoneer have decided that the new design is not going to be one that would take on a wood-sided look, at least on the outside, like the old ones did.
How about a country square?
A vinyl siding that was basically slapped on the side of the Grand Wagoneer, and it fit very well. And I'm looking at a picture of the old Wagoneer now. I cannot see it on the new one at all. It just isn't going to work. So I don't think there may be some aftermarket people who decide to try swapping on some vinyl siding, wood-looking siding on it, but I don't think it's going to go over very well. And the general feeling within the Jeep design industry is that it's not going to be a wood-sided Grand Wagoneer anytime soon, although I'm told that they will apply some kind of wood to the interior at certain places, like the dashboard, maybe the steering wheel, and maybe the side panels. It looks like a very appealing vehicle. It's going to be a big seller for Jeep, no doubt, because it will compete with, if not quite the Suburban Expedition levels of the Ford and Chevy, certainly it'll be bigger than anything else that Jeep has put out thus far. Three rows of seating, a lot of capacity, and it does look very appealing in the design I'm looking at. So for Jeep fans who want to go up a level beyond the current Cherokee, the Grand Cherokee, I guess, this Grand Wagoneer will be their answer to their prayers. What else is going on in the industry?
Have you been here for a while? Have you been moving about, or have you been in the area?
I've been moving about.
And are you seeing anything other than, when I say, is anything noteworthy, or is it just pretty much business as usual on the roads? What I mean by that is vehicularly. I have noticed just in the past couple of weekends, I'm sure Lime Rock's been doing stuff privately, and there were a bunch of, there are certainly car aficionados that are quite lively, but are you
they
just...
There have been, I've noticed that too, Jill. Certainly since the summer, there have been a lot of what I call classic design vehicles on the road around our northwest corner. And even in other areas where I've been, there were a couple of parades in July, and they all depicted cars of certainly 20 to 50 years old, and even older in some cases. And they're great-looking cars, I have to say. They are much smaller in many cases. I've been driving my 84 Mazda RX-7 around this summer, not having done so for several years. And I am taken by how small it is compared to the Corvettes, the Camaros, the Mustangs. The only car that is still in the size frame that I'm driving the RX-7 in is the Miata, the MX-5, out of Mazda. Of course, I have a rotary engine in the RX-7, which is no longer an engine in any vehicle currently made. And it is a fun car to drive. It's certainly not as fast as accelerative-wise as these new higher-powered vehicles, but it is every bit, if not far more nimble than many of the vehicles on the road today because of its small size. However, as lightness goes, it's as good as it is for being able to handle winding roads in a much quicker fashion than our heavier, wider, taller alternatives today. It is also very much more twitchy on wet roads, and I find that it is far more dangerous to drive this car on fast on winding roads in the wet than the heavier cars, which stick to the road better. So there's always pros and cons about the old versus the new in terms of technology, handling, roadability, and the like. But to say that it is a great fun car to drive is an understatement. I like the fact that it doesn't have all these all the computer programs to keep you from getting out of control, although they are much safer. And you can play with the car in a much more fun fashion than you can some of the newer vehicles. But technology has taken over for safety reasons, and we're not going to get back to the 1980s anytime soon, if ever.
No, but I guess what I'm wondering, and it's an offshoot of the same question that I keep asking, because I always think when you bring a bunch of new people into something, there is room for not only expansion, but there's opportunity for passion.
There's a lot of opportunity for passion.
And I know we had been going along thinking, well, these people are never going to drive. As a matter of fact, you're just going to put them in electric pods, then circle them around their cities like some sort of...
Well, I've been talking to a lot of people about their driving feelings, and there's certainly a two-sided event. As we know, Jay, our partner in this show sometimes, is very much a pro self-driving car aficionado to a certain point. I am very much not a pro self-driving car, and I've recently been talking to several people who are very happy with cars that do not drive themselves and have no intention of ever wanting to have a car that drives themselves.
And are they a similar demographic?
Excuse me?
Are they a similar demographic?
Well, yes, they are similar demographic, but they're also dissimilar.
Okay.
Let me tell you a Tesla story that Jay told me recently, and maybe some of the listeners have heard this story. I had not heard it. Apparently, there was a Tesla going down the road at something like 70 miles an hour, and as the story goes, as Jay told it...
It was 93, and I sent you that.
Yes, you sent that story, exactly.
Okay.
He read that to me. I did not read it. I saw your sending. And apparently state troopers came up and tried to stop the car, and as the story went, you read it, I didn't. They turned on their siren or something and tried to stop the car, and the car went up to 90 miles an hour instead of slowing down. and there were two kids inside, I guess they were driver age, in the front seat, supposedly in a reclined seat position, asleep. Is that what it was? Is that correct?
I guess
somehow the Tesla was able to be brought to a stop, and I guess the kids are being, I don't know what they're being cited for, but it was an amusing story, and it goes to the heart of just how far do you want to take a self-driving car. Do you really want to have a self-driving car that you can take a nap in without having to pay attention to what's going on? I said to Jay, this kind of technology should be overridden by eyesight cameras in the vehicle. That if the eyes are closed for more than 20 or 30 seconds, the car should come to a stop on their own, pull over to the side on their own, of course, and come to a stop until whoever's inside sleeping is woken up to see what happened.
Right.
See what happened.
Geez,
exactly.
It doesn't feel the same. No, I quite agree. I had a minor. It's the difference between human intelligence and artificial intelligence. It was chilly this morning, and my vehicle said to me to be careful of ice.
Yeah.
And
interesting, because you're right. And,
but it's, I mean, I laughed at it. I appreciated the reminder, but I did not have to.
Well,
it wasn't
trip,
wet.
On my various trips this morning, there was a lot of frost on the ground in some places, and the thermometer in my car read 36 degrees, and there were frosty white fields along the side, which means that there was below freezing temperatures at that level, and frost had formed on the blades of grass. Fortunately, the roads were not depicting a similar situation, and the roads were fine and safe, and basically of dry asphalt, I noticed, so it wasn't dangerous to drive. But, you know, we have this technology. You have thermometers in your cars. You've got computers in the cars. Computers know what the temperature is outside, and they send various signals to the car to do certain things. On all Jeeps that have the cold weather package, for instance, when the temperature is below 36, the cold weather package activates itself in the form of heating the seats and in the Jeep situation, heating the steering wheels without your having to turn on those systems manually by pushing a touchscreen or a button. Above 36 or maybe even 40, it does not come on, but a depiction on the center screen comes on, offering you the option of turning on your heated seat and or steering wheel, even if it is above freezing, because it is cold outside and 40 degrees is not warm. So the computer decides what to do up to a certain point based on the temperature reading of the vehicle.
Right, but it
Or it leaves it to you to do it, or it'll do it for you.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm going.